You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
And the congregation is once again back together. That's right. It is the one and only Church of the Lampshade Show, and it's installment number 77. Believe it or not, the congregation meeting up once again. This is, if you're new around these parts, probably the most unique show you're going to find on the internet, if I do say so myself, and I do. We do something a little unique here and in many different aspects, and above all, we seek the truth. We speak the truth, and of course, we have a Christian-specific message later on in the show. It's kind of everybody's highlight, I think. But as always, we like to, before we get into that, we like to sit around and visit about the things on our minds, the things we see going on around us. And all in all, we have a back and forth here. It's a good time. You listen once, you'll be hooked. You'll want to be a member of the congregation. And that's okay, because there's no red tape, no paperwork, no hoops to jump through. You're just welcome to get on in here and be a part of what we do here. And hopefully this show will continue to grow and see more congregants. But if not, that's okay. We're quite happy with what we got. Like I said, it is installment number 77 of the Church of the Lampshade Show. And we always like to kick things off by recognizing and listen back and forthing with folks that pay their tithes. That's right. Don't be shy. Pay your tithes to the Church of the Lampshade Show. Don't worry. We don't spend a whole lot of time shilling for shekels here, but it is very much appreciated. And you know, this is all part of the back and forth, part of what makes the listeners every bit as much a part of the show as the host. If you want to be a part of financially supporting the show, sponsoring, however you want to call it, information's at the bottom of the page there with the show notes and everything on it. We've got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. If you've got other some kind of weirdo cryptocurrency, I don't know, reputation token. There's like 6 million different cryptocurrencies. And drop me an email. That's down there as well. I'll try my best to get you an email address for that as well. And speaking of cryptocurrencies, just getting off on a side, I saw a deal the other day. In fact, I actually had somebody send me a video Ron Paul talking about it, and so I got to looking into it. And I remember hearing about this several years back, and I guess they're re-ginning it up again. And of course, the Fed hates cryptocurrency because they don't control it. So, you know, as is expected, now they're ginning up an idea of a Fed coin, basically their own cryptocurrency, only run by the Federal Reserve. How handy. That way they know everything you're doing, and you know, they have their sticky little fingers in the cryptocurrency pie as well. And of course, I think another aspect of that is once they do that, because like you can't print your own money, you know, like with regular paper money, you can't compete with the dollar. You live here in America, you can't print, I don't know, but GPL notes, you know, I'd like to pay for this and GPL bucks. Well, you can't allow to do that. You know, the dollar is the currency of the nation. And I think one of the aspects, one of the angles they would go for with that is, oh, well, now that we have Fedcoin, no other cryptocurrencies are allowed to compete. Now, I'm not sure how exactly it would shut that down. I mean, they could shut down a lot of the, you know, I guess they could shut down any way to use it, you know, any of the medias. I don't know. But I think that would be one of the angles they would go through to try to attack cryptocurrency. It would be like, well, there's cryptocurrency. You want cryptocurrency? There's a perfectly safe and available cryptocurrency now. That's right. Why would you want to take the risk? Cryptocurrencies to go up and down in value when you can have this nice stable Fed coin just tied to the dollar. It doesn't go up and down. Well, actually, it just goes down, but it's over a long enough period of time that maybe you won't notice. And so we're going to have to shut down any competition. That can't be allowed. We have so much freedom, the free market, all this competition here in the U.S. Only you don't actually have competition. You get shut down if you try to compete. But the people still think they've got all the freedom. And like I said, we like to get off into the listener support mailbag. We have three supporters this week, including our Bitcoin Anon population. So let's get to it. Mr. T coming through big for us this week. Very much appreciated. Once again, I want to thank you for showing me the way. I was indeed lost. I pray God will watch over you and yours. And thank you. Thank you very much. And we are. I tell you what, I've just, I don't know how to say it without sounding arrogant, but it's actually the opposite. I'm very humbled. God has blessed me very much through all these trying times and continues to bless me. I'm just absolutely amazed. I can't tell you. I mean, there's been times it's like, you know, I'm looking forward to the next week and I'm thinking, you know, because I know back of my mind, like all of you do, you know, like next week, I got to pay this, this, and this. And, next week's going to be tough. But yeah, next week comes around and at the end of the week, everything works out. Sometimes I can't even tell you how it works out, but everything just winds up balancing out. I'm just incredibly blessed, and I'm very just it's a humbling thing, and yeah, y'all are a part of that blessing. It really is. I mean, that's I've spoke about this before, but people get this notion that, you know, God blessing people is like, you know, I don't know, manna from heaven or something. Like he does some great miracle and you wake up and there's a pot of gold sitting in the middle of your bedroom floor. But a lot of, I think, God's blessing is we actually, you know, bless each other with what we try to do. And hopefully this show is a blessing for you. I really do for all of y'all. And, you know, it's something you can take heart in when you are actively participating. You know, people are always like, what do I do for God's will? You know, well, you figure out a way to be a blessing for other people. And you know what? If God is blessing them through you, then you're actively participating in what God is doing. It's not that hard to get off in the middle. And the more you do these things, the more you try to be a blessing for other people. And I'm not just talking about send money to the show. You'll be doing God's will. I'm not saying that because there's many ways you can be a blessing for other people, you know. And the more you do that, the more we talked, you know, on the previous show about being in tune, you know, with God. And the more in tune with God you will be if you're participating in what he's doing, if you're actively participating in what God is doing, you are naturally going to be more in tune. You're going to be more in line with what he's doing. And you'll understand these things. Greater, you know, you get more understanding. You know, the lights start going off in your mind. It's like, oh, I never understood that. Now I get it. But anyway, let's keep on rolling because we do got a show to go, and I get so off track. But see, that's a great thing. We do this back and forth. This is the easiest part of the show for me to do, by the way, because you know I hear from the listeners, and I get to, you know, it's kind of like having time delayed bants, you know. We have our bants, we have our back and forth going. It's just like with a really slow internet connection. I sent this to you, GPL, and I haven't heard back from you. Well, I'm buffering. I'm buffering right now. Next up from Bill, Grandpa, sending my monthly tithes for the month of August. Very much appreciated. Believe me, it is. I continue to enjoy your shows, but I disagree with you as far as coronavirus epidemic being a hoax. Living in the big city, I'll leave it that way so it's as anon as possible, which experienced huge peaks in deaths a few months ago. I can tell you that it is for real and is not the same in its effects as the common flu by a long shot. Also, I don't see the problem with masks being mandated, just as the state has the right to require motorcycle riders to wear a helmet for public safety as well. For the likely survival of the rider, I think the same right applies to requiring the wearing of masks. I think there's room for debate as to whether or not schools should reopen, how soon restaurants should be allowed to have full capacity, and those types of questions. Also, as Tucker Carlson pointed out in his program last night, it's becoming clear that the Democratic mayors and governors are likely wanting to exaggerate reactions to the coronavirus crisis by wanting to restrict activity, with the idea being that this could hurt Trump's re-election chances. In any case, I'm not an expert or a medical doctor, so it's always possible I'm wrong, in my opinion. But at this point, I disagree with you on your take on this particular issue. Continue to especially enjoy the Christian segment of the podcast, as well as most of what you express and have opinions on in the opening part. Best, Bill. Well, I will wade through this. Good stuff. Good stuff. For starters, please don't ever think that, like, I expect y'all to blindly agree with everything I say. One of the great things, in fact, I actually expect otherwise. I really do. I believe that as truth seekers, I'd like to think that the congregation is truth seekers. And as we all try to figure out the truth, I expect the congregation is by and large a bunch of free thinkers. So of course there's going to be times that, the listeners aren't going to agree. I don't expect everybody to blame, how dare you say you don't agree with me? Tear this up. It's not like that at all. And for goodness sake, I'm not so narcissistic as to think that I absolutely can't be wrong about anything. That would be the height of foolishness. But okay, but I thought we would wade through this just a little bit, because there's several things here as I wade through this, and I think they're good points, to think about. And one of the things too, when you get into referring, and I really kind of don't like using the term hoax when it comes to the coronavirus. I'm sure I have, but at the same time, I kind of don't, because when you use the word hoax, it implies that you're saying it doesn't even exist at all, which obviously it does. It's obviously a thing. It's kind of like that same thing you run into, like if you get into a discussion about the validity of the Holocaust narrative, for instance. If you just say the Holocaust never happened, people are like, well, what are you talking about? I've seen camps. I've seen pictures of the camps. I've seen the pictures of people in camps. So how do you define Holocaust? Are you talking about, were these people put into camps? Yes, obviously they were. I don't think anybody denies that happened. But do you think they were, for instance, forced to really sit in trees and crow like roosters until they fell out of the trees dead? It's a little iffy. But when you use a broad term like hoax, people think, will automatically assume like you're saying it didn't ever happen. And that does become, it does become a problem. And it's kind of the same thing with this. Obviously the COVID-19 thing does exist. Now, we know, we have documentation that they are way exaggerating the dangers of this thing. And again, for certain age demographics and people with health problems, it is a very serious thing. If I was in one of the high risk factors from this thing, oh, heck yeah, I would be probably wearing my mask around all the time. Just try to kind of protect myself. Although really, medically speaking, the masks are, if you were sick, trying not, to make other people. Again, they've done this in Asia for years. If you have a cold or something, you put the mask on. The regular flu kills lots of people. They just don't make an issue of it. I think the Spanish, I don't remember the number, but like the Spanish flu epidemic, whatever it was, decades ago, killed a whole lot of people, but they didn't make a big deal about it. I think the real issue comes down to the reaction over this thing. It's not saying that it doesn't exist, but the reaction to this thing. Yes, I think trying to keep Trump from getting reelected is, sure, that's definitely a big part of it. But I don't think that's all of it either. I really do believe this is all about training people to be controlled. You pointed out, and it's amazing how it's always a step-by-step thing. For instance, like you pointed out, the state has the right to tell people they have to wear a helmet, ride a motorcycle. Well, in Texas, by the way, they don't do that. People are still free to choose for themselves whether they want to wear a helmet or not. But I think it's interesting that we just naturally assume that they have all of this authority. In some cases, maybe they do, maybe they don't. I just think it's interesting that, for instance, just to stick with that motorcycle mandate, if you live in a state where it's mandated, you have to wear a helmet to wear your motorcycle. Hopefully you're not wearing a motor. If you are wearing your motorcycle, you'll be glad you had the helmet, because that means that thing's probably on top of you. But in that instance, let's say for that illustration, if you get pulled over by a cop, you don't have your helmet on, he's going to write you a ticket. And you're like, well, why? Well, because it's the law. Well, what makes it the law? It makes it the law because a bill was at some point was presented in the state legislature. It was debated. It was voted on. It went to the governor. The governor signed it and it became law. And yet, with these shutdowns of restaurants, with these mask mandates, like even here in Texas, they say, oh, they can fine you for violating the mask mandate. Why? Well, it's the law, really. Point to me what bill was presented in the legislature. What bill was presented and debated on? Who voted on this? And then the governor signed it so it was enacted into law. And nobody can do that because it wasn't. It wasn't presented as a bill in the legislature. It was this whole system is collapsing and all of that. But still, if we're going to operate under the facade that we still have a functioning government with a functioning set of rules of how things are supposed to work so that the people understand how things are supposed to work. You know, people always say, well, if you don't like it, vote for different politicians. You know, you even have cops say that. It's like, well, it's ridiculous that there's a law against this that I have to wear a helmet when I ride my motorcycle. And the cop is likely to tell you, well, contact your representative, tell him to change the law. But right now that's the law, sir, and I'm enforcing the law. But this isn't the law. Who you going to contact your representative and say, hey, I have a problem with this law that says I have to wear a mask. And he's like, you're out of luck because it's not a law. The governor just suddenly has the power for it and nobody is questioning it. It's absolutely, if we're going to operate under the idea that we have a functioning system with a set of rules that everybody understands how things work. And, you know, hey, it goes through the legislature, it's debated, that makes it become law. If you don't like it, you vote for somebody else and they change the law. Then that needs to be the rules. That needs to be the boundaries that are, you know, that are operated within. That way everybody understands. But now they're just making up the rules as they go. Now the governor apparently is a dictator for the state. Really, that's where we are at with these things. How are they going to write you a ticket when it's not a law? Well, it's a executive order. So that's the same thing as what, a royal decree? I thought we had the democracy and the representation, but we don't have any of those things. You have some place such as the city of Dallas. We have a judge there, and the judge basically is just, he's the one ruling everything. He comes out and says what you can and can't do. If you can open your business, can't open your business. It's absolutely breathtaking, and nobody is questioning it. It's just another step for more authoritarian power. And that's the thing. It always comes back to that. This current system is collapsing. You're ultimately going to wind up with some form of authoritarianism. And what we're being presented here, the people are being presented with, is the only game in town will be that these people, the oligarchs, the big corporations, the bankers, all of these people, you know, those who rule, those who have the power now, will have even more power because they're the only game in town. It's all linked together. All the commie mobs in the street, all of this, it's all a part of the bigger plan. I absolutely do believe that. Once again, though, I just really think it's worth pointing out that these mask mandates, if they're going to threaten to punish people for not going along, it needs to be a law, which means it needs to go through the proper channels. But it's an emergency. We don't have time for that. That if that's a reasonable justification, then what cannot be warranted by that? What can't be warranted by that? Isn't it amazing that none of these governors are using their somehow newfound powers? Because it's an emergency, it's a crisis, we don't have time to debate a law for some reason, even though what, we're 7, going on 8 months into this thing, I guess, now. And they, you know, that's plenty of time for them now to present laws in the legislatures, debate them, vote on them. Why do we even have state representatives if the state legislature is now, I guess, like the U.S. Congress and doesn't actually do anything? What's the point of having them if the governors rule by decree? But isn't it funny that none of these governors, with their newfound power and for these emergency situations, how many of them aren't actually seem to be too concerned with using that power to stop people? Oh, I don't know. From burning cities down and destroying public property? That's just not a big enough emergency, I suppose. Anyway, good stuff. And when, once again, don't ever worry about not agreeing. Like, I'm going to be offended if you don't agree with me on everything, because it's all part of what makes life interesting. And finally, up from Rock Dad, Grandpa Lampshade, thought I'd chime in on this. Somebody else with the COVID thing. On the COVID scare, in my state, our governor has enacted an executive order. Once again, mandating that masks be worn inside all places of business. I find it strange that none of the entrance or exit door handles of these businesses ever seem to get sanitized. Seldom do any of these businesses provide any hand sanitizer either. Wouldn't it stand to reason that this virus is such a magnitude that people need to wear masks for their safety and others shouldn't? There's Also be an, shouldn't there also be an executive order mandating businesses sanitize door handles upon every patron's entrance and exit, or at least require businesses to provide hand sanitizer at every exit and entrance door that does not automatically open? Something doesn't add up. Also at my work, there are about 35 people who contacted the Doom virus. We are, two were hospitalized. Both of them were in their 60s and one was diabetic. Every one of them got over it and returned to work. Most people who got it didn't even know they had it, but got tested anyway because they weren't particularly feeling well. And the COVID shit was being pushed constantly in the news, so they thought they should get tested. Well, once again, isn't it amazing that they have to close down certain businesses? Like here in Texas, they've closed down the bars because you might catch it at the bar, but you're not going to catch it at Walmart. You're not going to catch it at any big corporate store, are you? You go to Lowe's, you go home to Home Depot. Got a tongue twister. You get to go to any of the big, they've never shut down a corporate store, have they? When are they going to shut down Target? Because you just might catch the COVID. They don't. None of the big corporate outfits. In fact, they're just getting wealthier. They're just breaking it in. Amazon's making a killing because everybody's just ordering stuff to be delivered to their house. Heads you lose, tails they win. It's a good deal. No, it's just, once again, it's so much of this is a power grab. And again, nobody's saying that it doesn't exist. And for some people, it is a serious, it could be a serious thing. And that's not to be taken lightly. But at the same time, this is a, this is an obvious power grab. And the first hint of that is, again, we've got threats of fines by executive order. There is no law being passed by the state legislatures saying making it a law. And their original excuse justification was this: it's a crisis. We don't have time for that. But we're 8 months in now, and still, I don't know of any state, and I could be wrong, so, you know, but I don't know of off the top of my head of any state that's actually gone down, sat down, and actually somebody proposed a bill and passed a law. So what the governors now, I guess, are just little miniature kings, or down the city level, some judge, suddenly he has the magic power to say who can be open and who cannot. We're being played. I really believe we're being played. We're being trained. Oh, by the way, forget the masks. Masks are so last month. Now they're warming people up. Did y'all see they're warming people? Fauci, who is like, I guess, supposed to be the god of all things corona, has now said that we need to start thinking about wearing plastic face masks and goggles. It's just like, this guy is a quack. I mean, how do you not look at this? Face masks and goggles. It's just the demands are just getting more and more absurd. So, yeah, good stuff. Anyway, once again, appreciate all of you supporting the show. Again, that information's at the bottom of the page as we continue to rock on with our spicy discussion. Spicy discussion of all things going on in the world, going on in this clown world around us. So, as we continue thinking about our apparently post-legal society that we live in now, and I alluded to it earlier, and many times other on shows, you know, why the hell do we have a Congress at the federal level? Why? All they do is hold hearings. They hold hearings and have investigations. They don't really ever seem to actually do much else. Nobody really wants to wind up being on the wrong side of anything, so they just don't do anything. They don't do anything. And it's easy to sit here and bitch about the Democrats, the demon rats. But it's easy to sit around and bitch about the Democrats, but they are what they are. What's more upsetting are the Republicans. Where the hell are the Republicans at? What are they doing exactly? I mean, it's easy. People, you know, have their mixed views of Trump, but Trump is one guy. Where are the Republicans in the Senate? Where are the Republicans in the House of Representatives? Oh, they're doing good lip service. They had hearings, just this past week? Giving a good tongue lashing to the big tech companies, social media people. Running the social media, because how dare you? You're banning conservative voices. Well, glad you finally noticed. But who's presenting a bill? Why doesn't somebody yank their, since they're obviously publishers, they're not being treated like a public square for people to have an open discussion. They're obviously editing content, which makes them publishers. How about yanking that exemption they seem to get to enjoy? They really get to have it both ways. Must be nice. They get to have it both ways. You can't sue them for content on their websites because they get an exemption because they're a platform for the free flow of ideas. Except it's only the ideas they approve of. And nobody does a damn thing about it. This isn't that hard. Yank their exemption. Quit doing hearings. Quit giving them a tongue lashing. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, Mr. Zuckerberg, I don't agree. Shut the hell up and do something. But where are they at? Where are they at? Where are them Republicans at? Mitch McConnell. There's Mitch McConnell. He's trying to work out a deal. They're trying to do something. They're trying to work out a deal to extend people's boosted unemployment benefits. Because they destroyed the economy over the COVID. They shut down. Is COVID serious for some people? Yes. Does it exist? Yes, absolutely. Was it worth destroying the economy over? I'm going to say no. I mean, good night. You think, if you had a major real plague going around, people still need to eat. People still need to work. People still need to get on with their lives. But they shut everything down. Now, they're papering it over. They're papering it over, trying to keep people from realizing that how badly they've destroyed the economy. And they'll talk, of course, the media lies. They'll talk about, new unemployment claims went down this week. Only 1 million people applied for unemployment instead of 1.3. Yeah, but what about all the millions and millions that have already applied over the past months and are still on it? You're just saying the number of new people signing up. That means they're still hemorrhaging jobs. Anytime you have new people, why can't we have negative? Like, you know what? Nobody signed up for new unemployment benefits this week. That's awesome news. That's something you could celebrate. That would be something real. You'd say, hey, nobody signed up for new unemployment benefits. And in fact, we had 1 million people get off unemployment this week. That would be a real thing. But to sit there and say, you know what? 300,000 fewer people lost their job than last week or last quarter, whatever the case. And this is supposed to be some sort of celebration. They're trying to paper it over so people don't realize because, you lose your job. You're like, oh, shit, I've lost my job. I got to apply for unemployment. I get my unemployment and the federal government is kicking in an extra $600 a week. And well, shit, I just got a raise. Because we're down to low-wage jobs in so many parts of the country. Anyway, hell, I just got a raise. You're not going to be upset. Wow, I'm making more money than ever, and I just stay at home. Sure, I have to am required to apply for X amount of jobs per week, but you know what? There aren't any jobs, so it's not a problem. It's not like I'm going to lose my benefits because somebody hires me. I'm good to go. People aren't going to be angry. People aren't going to be upset. But the fact remains, I can't go on forever. This dance cannot go on forever. The music stops at some point. And what the hell? What then? The Republicans seem to be under the impression that we're obviously going through a major paradigm shift in the world, really, and in America in particular. I mean, you can look at this. And yet the Republicans act as though they can just keep doing their song and dance. I mean, my gosh, you hear their campaign ads? They're breaking out basically the same talking points they were using 20, 30 years ago. Candidate A, he's pro-life. Who the hell gives a shit about abortion right now? I'm not saying it's not an issue, but nobody cares about that right now. Coronavirus and communists in the street. That's all anybody cares. Those are the two issues. And where are the Republicans? Where in the hell are they? They act as though they can just keep on with their fake opposition game. Like it's 1996 and everybody will buy into it. That this will keep selling. Because what are you going to do? Vote for the Democrats? Ha! It's... The arrogance of it is absolutely, I don't know, it's absolutely mind-numbing. I think I mentioned it on an earlier show, being here in Texas. I heard a campaign ad for somebody running for the state, and he had Ted Cruz speaking for him. I'm thinking, why the hell would you do that? Everybody hates Ted Cruz. Yeah, I mean, really, everybody. Everybody hates that guy.
Hi, this is Ted Cruz. I'm working alongside President Trump in Washington, D.C. to drain the swamp.
No, you're not, you lying sack of shit. Nobody thinks you're doing that. You are the swamp, dude. You're not fooling anybody. That's how little they think of their voters, by the way. They think that you'll buy that. They think that you'll actually believe it.
I'm working alongside President...
Really, what have you done? Exactly. Tell us, what have you voted on to actually drain the swamp, as it were? And done a damn thing. None of them done a damn thing. Oh, look at them. Look at them. Do any of these some bitches look like they're going to stand up and do a damn thing? Do you look at Mitch McConnell and does he inspire confidence? Now, here's a guy who's going to take a stand for the people. No, you see a guy that's going to sit there and dither over the amount of extended unemployment benefits, but he's going to make sure the banks, he's going to make sure the corporations are all well taken care of. Don't worry. They never wants to debate that. And yet they think they can do the same song and dance as long as they go back at election time and tell the rubes back home that they're pro-abortion and want to protect their Second Amendment rights, so vote for them. Because what are you going to do? Vote for the demon rats? Pretty blackpilling. You know, as a voter, it's pretty hard to give a shit and want to vote for any of them. Look, you can vote for somebody who's openly an enemy of the people and wants to destroy your nation, or you can vote for me. I'm a traitor who's going to wind up basically giving them everything they want, but I will tell you that I'm against it. And I'm on occasion, we'll have a hearing and I will give them a severe tongue lashing while they destroy your country. Woo! What a choice. We have these mobs in our post-legal society going around. They're being bussed in. They bust them in now to towns to tell them, you have to take your statue down. We don't like this monument. We don't like that. Y'all aren't allowed to have it. The locals don't give a shit. The locals like it. They take pride in it. But people from somewhere else feel they have the authority to be bussed in and dictate to people in another community what they're allowed to have and what they're not allowed to have because they are their moral superiors. Who pays for the buses? Anybody curious? Since these people are showing up without any permits, they're already breaking the law by having these demonstrations without any permits. Most of, you know, since so many times they wind up destroying property, they're making open threats. Think maybe the feds might be mildly curious who paid for the buses to bring them in? That maybe. Just a little bit of curiosity. Doesn't seem to be, because it just keeps on trucking. While people such as myself do a humble show here on the internet, we have to be extra careful. Anything we say can't be taken in context, out of context, stand on your head, close one eye, hop up and down, you know, deciphered to be interpreted as an incitement to violence in any way, shape, or form. You got people paying to bus people in, a violent mob to bus people in. Imagine that. Just imagine. If we you're going to have to use your imagination. But imagine, for instance, say the humble lampshade host here decided to fund and bus in a pro-white mob to hold a demonstration somewhere. Violent pro-white. You can't even imagine. It's laughable because, you know, they'd be all out there thinking it would be shut down before the idea even left my mind. Yeah, nobody seems curious. You got people that in some of these communities now, you see it on TV, you peruse the news, you hear about it if it happens in your area. And, you know, local people in the community now are showing up to try to protect their property. They're trying to show up and protect their monuments, their heritage, part of their community. What makes it's considered a part of the community? It's not just about being a statue. It's about being, you know, this represents our town. This represents who we are. Who are these assholes coming in here and telling us we're not allowed to have what we want to have? This is our town. Go worry about your own town. And you got local people showing up with weapons now, trying to guard their deal. And now you've got these people being bussed in with guns, by the way. Let's add that. You've got these people being bussed in from somewhere else with guns. Nobody in the federal government, FBI, anybody seems to be mildly curious about who might be funding that. Be careful what you say on your show, because if you closed one eye and turned the lights off, somebody could take that out of context and think that was an incitement to violence. But over here, somebody is bussing in people with a load of freaking AK-47s. What could go wrong? That's not an incitement to violence. That's a peaceful protest. It's utterly absurd. But again, we live in a post-legal society. One of the hardest things to explain to normies is if the politicians, if the government didn't want these things taking place, they would shut them down. They don't seem to grasp the ability that they have to shut shit down and shut it down hard. You know, if they didn't want this to happen, this would be done. They would round up the organizers, charge them with multiple shit. You know, we know how they operate. I don't have to go through that. Y'all understand their ability to how they operate. People act as though, well, they're just not sure how to deal with these mobs. It's because they have Democrat mayor. No, where are the Republicans? We know the Democrats are with the commies, but where the hell? The Republicans are supposedly the opposition. Where the hell are they at? When was the last time you saw a local town standing up, standing out their citizens out there? Because they have to show up and do it now because nobody else will. Nobody else has the cojones to do it. When was the last time you saw a Republican strap on and go out there and stand with the people that they supposedly represent? No, they're nowhere to be found. They're off giving lip service somewhere about how they're with you or something. They're off somewhere being outraged because one member of the Black Lives Matter movement actually criticized the Jews, and you're not allowed to do that. They're outraged about that. They don't really seem to care too much if a mob shows up and tears shit down in your town. And by the way, I've seen, you know, and I understand the reasoning, but I see a lot of people real critical of these townspeople, you know, in different communities showing up, you know, with their guns and critical of that. But I pose the question, what the hell else are they supposed to do? We're supposed to have a system to where where the government takes care of this. The government protects your community, protects the people that live there, protects the public property, protects people's right to have a different opinion than somebody else. And they're not doing any of those things. So what the hell are these people supposed to do? Just shrug and say, well, guess we'll just keep giving them what the hell they want. What are they supposed to do? And so they take up weapons and go down to their town. By the way, I don't participate in any of that. I don't. And it's not because I don't understand where they're coming from, but it's just or even, you know, I get it. But, you know, to be quite honest and humble about it, my presence would cause more harm than good. But I understand where they're coming from. One of the important things, you know, I've talked about, you know, people say, what do we do? And we get to this, what can we do? And I tell people over and over again, you know, you need to making an effort to get to know the people in your community, different people. You're going to have to get out there. You're going to have to get out and talk to people, you know, people you work with, people you know. You got to be sociable. It's hard. You got to be sociable. It's important. You find people in your community. And a part of that is, yes, as things collapse, you're going to need to, you know, have a network where you can support one another. But it's also important for another thing. Normies, as it were, you know, they have good intentions, but they don't understand. If you actually get out and talk to people and that are mad, you know, people that are mad about what's happening, they're mad that people are being bussed in to destroy things that are considered a part of their community. And you start getting to where you talk to these people, you understand they have no clue why this is happening. And again, to do that, you're going to have to be able to feel people out, not be autistic, keep that in check. You know, if you just show up and people are like, well, let me tell you about the Jews. Yeah, I mean, don't do that. Listen to people and you'll find that these people don't understand. And the best that you can, you know, the more you can kind of at least make them understand. For instance, I just said that, you know, these people showing up and defending their community, I've got no problem with what the hell else are they supposed to do? That having been said, I think it's also important to explain to them how this works. These are very tense situations, and I don't like it. I don't like it. You've got people showing up with weapons to defend their community. You've got these people being bussed in, and they have weapons, and you have these face-offs. My gosh, you know, all it takes is somebody setting off some firecrackers in the middle of this and it's going to be a war zone. And then what? We know what. And it's important to explain to these people, you know, I mean, it's fine you want to go do this, but understand, no matter the outcome, no matter who starts it, fairness does not figure into a post-legal society. You will be white supremacist, Confederate apologist for slavery, something who gunned down a bunch of peaceful protesters. Never mind the fact there'll be video all over the place of the supposedly peaceful protesters emptying magazines into the crowd of people from the town that live in that town in this hypothetical situation. The media will portray it as, oh, evil white supremacist mob gunned down peaceful protesters for the racism or something, even though so many of these people being bussed in aren't black, they're white people, but never mind, it'll still be racism or something, or hatred, a promotion of hate. And these people don't understand any of this. They still are living in the bubble that there is still some form of rule of law, there is still some form of justice or fairness in the country, and there's not. And I think it's important to try to explain to people as much as you can. And to do that, they have to know you. They have to be able to kind of trust you so they'll listen to you. And explain to them, you know, this is all well and good, but understand that, you know, if something goes south, you're getting the blame. It'll be just like Charlottesville. The only people who will be arrested, the only people who will be charged. Remember how they said that Only the people who showed up with the permit legally to hold their protest, they had to be responsible for all the violence, no matter who committed it. They literally said that. It will be that for these people now. See, when that happened, they were all like, well, sounds like these guys were Nazis or something, so why should I care? But see, now that same rule will be applied to them, and they need to understand that. And you got to get over your bitterness of, how, where the hell were you when this was happening to other people that warned you? Got to get over that shit. Doesn't matter now. Doesn't matter now. It's important to explain to these people, okay, look, see this? This is what they're going to do to you. But I'm not a Nazi. It doesn't matter. I hate to break it to you, but you know, I mean, National Socialist Germany hasn't existed for what? Going on 80 years now? You know? I mean, it just... Yeah, you're going to be called a Nazi. You're going to be called a white supremacist. They're going to say all of the violence was the townspeople's fault. None of the people that were bussed in with AK-47s in the bus. No, it won't be their fault. It will be your fault. So that at least they go into these things understanding the risks that they're taking. But to bring things back around on topic, they shouldn't be having to take those risks. You know, you go to a town and you drive around the square and there's citizens standing around with weapons to protect the public property. Why the hell are they having to do that? If this isn't a demonstration of the utter failure of a society, then what is? I mean, seriously, why do you have a government? And why the hell do we have Republicans? They're supposed to be, that's supposed to be the counterparty standing up for normal people that don't want to live in a Marxist hellhole? And where the hell are they?
They're dithering about and discussing about how much of a bailout we should give to Boeing or Coca-Cola or who the hell else. How many billions should we give to the corporations while we cut these extra unemployment benefits and continue to shut down the economy in the name of the coronavirus? That's where they're at.
They're not worried. They think they're going to roll around at election time and say, "Hi, I'm Jim Jones, and I'm pro-life. I believe in the Second Amendment, and I support our troops." And they'll get elected. Who gives a shit? Where are these guys supporting the community?
I support the troops, I'll have you know, and I love America.
Good, get your ass down here, because the county seat, the town, the county seat in your district is under siege by a violent mob. Where the hell are you? Lip service. I support the troops. You don't support the people because your ass ain't down there. Y'all all dithering around up there in Washington talking about, we're going to have a hearing and the cameras are going to be on me and boy, I'm going to look good. I'm going to get my tongue lashing. Are you going to pass anything? Going to actually implement any changes? Nope. Nope. We're going to talk about how bad the Democrats are. And we know the Democrats are shit, but you don't look any better. You look like you're on the same team. We're going to wrap up on that note. We got to get into the Christian, much anticipated Christian specific segment. And more importantly, as we roll in to our sermon this week, I got to figure out what the sermon's even going to be about. Not even sure. So that's okay, because one of the great things about this show is I can pause, make some coffee, figure all of that out. So in the meantime, yes, y'all get in here, fill those pews. Those of you who don't stick around, I don't think anybody doesn't stick around. So I ain't even going to say that anymore. Everybody get on in here, fill those pews. That's right. It's time for the Christian-specific segment of the Church of the Lampshade Show. And as you get settled in here, all comfy, cozy, I know I'm doing the same. We talk about the Christian-specific. I guess I'm going to start this week's sermon, as it were, off with a little bit of confession. I've been tricking y'all. Been tricking you a little bit. Been a little bit tricky here, you know, because we talk about the Christian-specific segment, or the sermon, as you would here, the end of the show. But we also talk about the show itself being about seeking the truth. And really, you probably didn't know it, but really the whole show is a Christian-specific message. You don't really know it, because as if you're seeking truth, truth itself is a Christian message, I guess, is what I want to say. We do a Christian-specific segment here, but since the whole theme of the show itself is seeking truth, the whole show, really, when it comes down to it, is of a Christian nature. I wanted to talk a little bit this week. It kind of ties into that. There was a point to that remark, besides the fact that I thought it sounded pretty good. I thought we'd talk a little bit this week about our theme for this week's sermon, as it were, is wisdom and truth. I thought we'd talk a little bit about wisdom and truth. The more you know the truth and you understand and you seek the truth, in turn, the more you will find wisdom. And wisdom and understanding. When you understand the things going on in the world around you, especially when you get deep enough to understand them in a spiritual context, you're better off for it. You can't help but feel better off. You look at the masses of people who have no clue of what's going on. You feel sorry and you want to inform them. And this can oftentimes be frustrating because not everybody is receptive to the truth. Many in this fallen world, in fact, I would venture out to say that most scorn wisdom and embrace folly. They love the lie and they despise the truth. Why? Well, Christ said, because men love the darkness. And that's the world we live in. And yet, as you seek truth and by extension, wisdom and understanding, I mean, what does it profit you? You understand what's going on in the world around you. You get it.
You understand that all of you seeing all of these lies and you get it and you really feel like you have a good grasp of the big picture. And yet, it doesn't seem to change anything. But it does. It changes things, even if it seems that the world around you doesn't. It changes things because you understand how to function in this world. You are not caught up by the call of folly. You don't get caught up. You can resist the call for utter foolishness that this world has. I thought we'd go through Proverbs 9. It's not a long chapter. I like Proverbs. Lots of cool stuff in there. And I thought we'd talk about that because chapter 9 of Proverbs deals a little bit with folly and wisdom. The illustration in Proverbs 9 is that of a woman. Wisdom as a woman and folly as a woman, and the contrast of these two things. And like I said, it's not a long chapter, so we're going to read the whole thing and just kind of go through it and think about these things together. Wisdom hath builded her house and hath hewn out her seven pillars. She hath killed her beasts. She hath mingled her wine. She hath also furnished her table. She hath sent forth her maidens. She crieth upon the highest places of the city. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, Come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine which I have mingled. Forsake the foolish and live, and go in the way of understanding. So, we'll stop here for a second. Wisdom is not this far-off thing, and wisdom is something that you partake in. As you seek truth, as you seek understanding, wisdom is something, you know, you eat of the bread of my table, come and drink of my mingled wine. It's something you partake in. It's a never-ending process. You never reach a finishing point and say, well, that's it. I've attained wisdom and understanding. It is a lifelong process, and thus you partake in it once you choose to go that direction, once you choose to seek that thing, the more you'll hunger for it. Now, I think something that's interesting here is the distinction made. As we look back here, come eat of my bread, drink of my wine, which I have mingled. Okay, let's back up to 4. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. In contrast, in verse 6, forsake the foolish and live and go in the way of understanding. You see, there's a distinction made here between those who are simple and those who are foolish. You see, the simple person, they just don't know. You know, it's like the difference between somebody being stupid and somebody simply being ignorant. You know, there's nothing wrong with being ignorant. There's a lot of things that I'm ignorant about a lot of things. If you sat here and put out a big, you know, long, I don't know, physics math equation on the deal, I would have no clue what any of that means because I'm ignorant of it. Doesn't mean I'm stupid. I understand something, but I wouldn't understand that. So wisdom calls for the simple. If you don't understand things and you want to understand things, hey, my door is open. Seek me. Seek wisdom and understanding. But in contrast, what does it say? Forsake the foolish. Forsake the foolish. Don't waste your time on the stupid. Don't waste your time on the foolish. You'll just frustrate yourself. You're going to aggravate yourself. There's nothing to be gained here. And it'll get into that here as that gets explained as we pick up at verse 7. He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. There is such a depth there of really enlightenment when you think about it. If you've been doing this for a minute, such as I have, and most of you probably have, you know, back in the days when we could actually be on platforms like Twitter. But even now, if you're in Gabschwitz, you run into the same sort of thing. you know, you get into people, you have different kinds of interactions with people, and you'll have interaction with somebody, say, that doesn't agree with you on something, and you'll figure out right away what you're dealing with. You know, you know what I'm talking about? You start dealing with somebody and they're like, well, I think you're wrong about this. Oh, really? Why? And you start back and forth, and you figure out usually within a couple of sentences what you're dealing with. A wise man will sit there and say a reasoned argument. Where the fool will what? Because really, leftism in this country is the epitome of foolishness. They have no arguments. What do? Disqualify. Well, see, you're wrong because I believe that, you know, I mean, there's scientific, you know, evidence here. You know, race isn't just the color of the skin. People have, you know, fundamental differences between the races. That's what makes diversity and everything. But that doesn't make me, you know, like hate other races. I don't claim to hate other races. What do you mean? And what did they say? You're a racist, white supremacist. What are you on about? I thought we were having a discussion here. Hater. I demand you be banned. You're dealing with a fool and you're wasting your time. You will come across people and you will figure out, and the longer you do this, the quicker you can figure out what you're dealing with. Somebody that has a reasoned opinion, whether they agree with you or not, doesn't mean, you know, the only way you can be wise and have understanding is if you agree with me. That's stupid on your part. I mean, that's not the case. You can understand when somebody has a different opinion, but it is a reasoned opinion that you may think they're wrong about, but they are seeking wisdom and truth. Doesn't mean that they might come to the same conclusion as you, because they're seeing things from a different angle with a different set of life experiences. But the fool isn't seeking truth. The fool isn't seeking wisdom. The fool isn't seeking understanding. The fool wants to shout you down. The fool wants to disqualify you. The fool wants to whip up a mob against you. The fool wants to get you banned. And they win. That's winning in their mind. The truth doesn't factor into it. Justice does not factor into it. All they care about is, I won. Why? I got that evil hater banned. Well, that'll show them. It's a waste of time to engage with a fool. A scorner. Rebuke a scorner and what? They'll just heap abuse on you. This is what it's saying here. You run into these people. And they're just, they really are. I mean, because these terms, I hate using terms because they've all, you know, been watered down by the commies to mean what they want them to mean at the time. But the words hold actual meaning. You run into people that just, they're just so full of anger and hatred for everything around them, everyone around them. And when you run into them and you point out something that they're wrong about, or you point out a truth, and they will just attack you. So what I say is, a scorner, you'll get a blot. You know, I mean, you deal with these people, and it gets you nowhere, because they just want to attack you. And these may be people that claim they agree with you on other points, but the minute you come into a point of disagreement with them, there any truth seeking, any pretending to be seeking the truth goes out the window. They can't just simply disagree with you and say, oh, well, yeah, I disagree with you on that. They go into full attack mode. And you may or may not have ever encountered this. Trust me, I have. You have people that say, hey, you know, I think you're wrong about that. That's all fine and dandy. As I said at the beginning of the show, I don't expect people to agree with me on everything. And hey, I'm not so narcissistic as to think I can't be wrong. I always have to reconsider and think maybe I'm wrong about something. It is possible. It's shocking as that revelation may be. But you see, the scorner isn't able to do that. The scorner, the moment you tell them, hey, I think you're wrong about this, they fly off the handle. The scorner gets angry. The scorner then goes into full attack mode because you dared to say they might be wrong about something. And what do you gain from the experience? What do you gain from the interaction? Nothing. At the end of it, you're just frustrated. You've been dealing with this asshole now for an hour, posting back and forth. Now he's down to just screeching insults at you and calling you names and accusing you of being a secret Jew or something. And you've gained nothing from the experience. One of the great things about having done this for a while is I can spot these things from a mile away now. You know, I see the bait. Being stuck in Gabschwitz sometimes, I'll be trucking along and somebody will throw something down there and I'm like, I see that bait. Not going to engage with your foolishness. No desire to feed your reason for existing today. Because I don't care. I really don't care. I don't have energy, time, or the inclination to put up with it. And many of you have dealt with the same thing. And maybe you haven't thought of it in this way or had it spelled out in the scriptures we're covering today. It's a waste of time. You might feel like, man, I need to set this guy right. And there's times I've done that. There's times, you know, somebody whips off with some ridiculousness and you make a public display for everybody to see how foolish they are. But for the most part, you know, you may feel like, well, you know, I'm letting them get away with. Trust me. Let the fool go on their way. Let them throw their bait out to somebody else. Because you won't gain anything from the experience. Where a wise man, you can have a disagreement with a wise man. And in the end, if you're both seeking the truth, one of you at some point will say, oh, well, yeah, hey, yeah, a wise man will be able to say, yeah, I was wrong about that. I better adjust my worldview on that. Yeah, you know, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. You brought up a point I haven't thought of before. I'll adjust my view. When people are so, the fool is so married to the idea of being right all the time, of being right all the time. In fact, in their mind, any admission of being wrong about something is like they take it emotionally. They take that as an emotional attack on their character. And they can't stand it. They think it means if they were to admit they were wrong, they think that's to admit there's something wrong with them. But everybody's wrong about something. I mean, really, everybody's wrong about something at some point in time in their life. Nobody's right about everything all the time. But yet in the mind of the fool, this is a requirement. They have to be right all the time. And the more you try to prove to them that they aren't correct, the more they're just going to lash out and attack you because they take it as a personal attack on themselves. I know that other people run into this because I will have discussions with people online and, I will see them get defensive, not in the sense that they don't want to be proven wrong, but they think I'm going to take offense, you know, and they'll be like, look, I'm not trying, you know, I like what you say and everything. I'm just saying on this one thing, I don't agree with you. And I'm like, dude, don't get defensive. You know, I mean, we can have a discussion. I'm not going to sit here and start hurling insults at you because, you know, you view something slightly different than I do. If we're both seeking the truth, maybe we can figure out what's correct. And we'll get a little more wise for the experience. We're told here in the book of Proverbs, abandon the foolish. It's not your job to save them. What about these people? They're foolish. Don't waste your time. Really, don't. It's not your job to save them. It's not your job as a Christian believer to save the fool. It'll be a act of frustration. You're not going to enjoy the experience. Let's keep on rocking. I think we're due to pick up here at verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. And this brings back to what we say a lot here, what I like to point out here in the show. If you're seeking truth, you are seeking the Lord, whether you realize it or not. You may be hanging out and be like, well, I don't really believe any of this stuff, but I like listening to him rant about it. It's interesting. It's not boring like a regular church service. So I tune in and listen. If you're seeking the truth, you're automatically, you're kind of headed down that path. And I think something that's worth pointing out is, because you'll see this referenced a lot in the scripture, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And they're not saying that you literally should go around living your life being scared of God. It's more of, how do you explain it? For lack of a better way, and I understand why the word fear is used here. It's really an acceptance, an understanding of how small you are. and compared to God. We talked on last week's show, I talked about how small the universe is. You know, and I think it was a great show. If you didn't listen to it, I think you should listen to it. Give you some perspective on how small this universe that we live in because we live in the temporary, the temporal. But anyway, now, if the universe itself is small, how tiny are you in comparison to the Creator? It's not about going around literally having a emotional feeling of being frightened of God. Because that's not what he wants you to do. That's not what you're supposed to be doing. That's not his requirement. He doesn't want you. Now, are you terrified of me yet? that's not what God is going for here. And he personified this in Jesus Christ walking the earth and how Christ conducted himself. Yes, he wants to correct you when you are on the wrong path, just as a parent wants to correct their children so they'll live a better life and not put themselves in danger. He doesn't want you walk around having an emotional feeling of fright, of being scared that God's going to show up and cut your head off or cast you into hell. And it's important to understand because, as I've said before, you don't want to fall into the trap of having a mindset of an antagonistic relationship with God. He's not going around looking for an excuse to toss you into hell. He's throwing you every lifeline possible to keep that from happening. He's not wanting to throw you into hell. It's not like God's sitting around going, well, I really want to cast as many people into hell as possible. But, you know, I guess if I can't throw that one in. So, okay. It's not about that. It's really more of having a mindset of really understanding how small and how you really should just be insignificant if not for God's grace. You are so small compared to the Creator that you ought to just be insignificant to Him, and yet you're not. Yet He does care about you. He does love you. He cares about every single soul of His people. That's just, it's breathtaking. It's frightening. It's humbling. It's all of these things. And this is encompassed in the term fear of the Lord, is understanding how small you are and how really if he treated you as something insignificant, as like a piece of dust to be brushed off his coat, you couldn't complain about it because what right do you have to complain to the Creator? What right does the created have to complain? And yet he does care about you. He does go through all of this effort for you. He sent his only begotten son to pay the price, the extremely high cost. Because I wouldn't do that, would you? Would you say you could save all of humanity if you'd be tortured to death? I'd be like, humanity's on their own. It's up to me. But he did that for you. Fear of the Lord. That he would do this thing when really you're insignificant. Just one of countless that have come before, exist now, and will yet come to be. And yet he does care about you. This is fear of the Lord. It's not going around feeling scared about God all the time. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Understanding how small you are. Understanding that in the context of things, you're not the center of everything. And the knowledge of the holy is understanding. For by me, and this is wisdom continuing to speak here, for by me thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. We've talked before about the lie of sin. The devil tells you that, you know, man, sin is pleasure. This is all a bunch of rules and restriction. God doesn't want you to have any fun. And yet, you look at people that indulge a life of just chasing after greater and greater and greater sin, and they destroy themselves. It's not pleasurable at all. I mean, they might find some pleasure in the moment, but what pleasure is there in destroying yourself? Not just your body, as is often the case, but actually spiritually destroying yourself. And you can look at somebody that is spiritually destroying themselves, that has just eaten their entire spirit up. You can look at these people. And you can tell it. You can see these spiritual. They went to a doctor and got a physical checkup. The doctor would probably be like, you're perfectly healthy. And you look at these people in the eyes. And they're sick. They're spiritually They're spiritually destroyed. There's no pleasure there. You destroy your life. With wisdom, you will increase your days. You will, your life shall be, the years of thy life shall be increased. If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself. But if thou scornest, thou alone shall bear it. And this is just another way of saying, you know, those people we talked about that are just full of anger. Anger, they hate everything around them and everything in the world around. Thou shalt bear it. Just destroy yourself with it. If you live your life that way with this constant being, just hating everything, angry at everything around you because you can't do anything, you're just full of it. As we discussed earlier, it destroys you. You alone shall bear. You don't affect really the world around you with that. You're not punishing everybody else by living your life that way. You alone shall bear it. But if thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself. It does the opposite, in other words. Wisdom and understanding lift you up. They make you feel better. And you can actually kind of find things around you getting better as you seek these things. Let's continue on, because now we're going to get some contrast. Because we got wisdom illustrated as a woman, and now, likewise, foolishness will be illustrated as a woman here. Because it says a foolish woman. They're not talking about just women that are foolish. They're using the same illustration, but now they're saying on the flip side of the coin. A foolish woman is clamorous. She's simple and knoweth nothing. It's loud. Thinks she knows, simple, but knows nothing. For she sitteth at the door of her house on a seat in the high places of the city. The fool, foolishness, fool, the fool says, doesn't have enough sense to know their place, so as to speak. It exalts itself. Foolishness exalts itself in the high places of the city. To call passengers who go right on their way. Whoso is simple, let him turn hither. And as for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Now, I think this is interesting because foolishness, as illustrated here, is making the same call as wisdom made earlier. Because you remember, wisdom called to the simple and said, hey, come here, eat of my bread, and gain understanding, gain wisdom. But foolishness, as illustrated here, also calls to the simples. But what does foolishness say? Turn in hither, and as for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. You see, it'll be great. It's interesting. To back up a little bit here, they don't really expand on what she says to the simple, because once she gets the simple in her clutches of foolishness, there is no progressing. See, if you're just ignorant about something, you know, you can learn, you can understand from it. But once you just get sucked into foolishness, there is no progressing. Once she pulls the simple in that have no understanding about something, they're not, she's done with them. Because now they're just languish in foolishness. As for those who seek understanding, it's, you see here the lie that sin is pleasure. You know, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. It's the message of this world. Get yours now, any way you can. Partake in whatever pleasures, whether they be sinful or not. In fact, the more sinful, the more pleasurable it will be. Come on into my way of foolishness. This foolishness isn't going to tell you. You're going to destroy yourself in the meantime. And it is not about God is sitting there waiting to drop the rod on you. You would literally destroy yourself spiritually, physically, mentally. Foolishness doesn't tell you that. Foolishness says this will be fun. This will be great. You're going to enjoy it. It's going to be the greatest. Foolishness takes somebody who might be trying initially to seek understanding and swallows them up. Gets them so twisted and so turned inside out, that they're just caught up. They can't actually seek any understanding any longer. All they understand is themselves. All they understand is the right now. All they understand is what can, you know, them, self-centeredness, I guess I want to say. Does it feel good to me? Does it feel good to me? Does it make me feel good about myself? Forget how I treat anybody else. I would just keep on doing this. If I steal it, I'll steal it. If I can, just whatever. If I can cheat somebody, so be it. I'm getting mine. It's this focus on the here, the now. All that matters is what you do, what you get in this world. And likewise, the person who is, and thus the person who seeks understanding, gets destroyed by foolishness. They took the wrong path. So let's repeat verse 17. Stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. A bitch speaks a good game. She tells you it's going to be great here. Come on in. Come on in my door. It's going to be good. Stolen waters are sweet. You're going to love it. It's going to feel good. Come on in, embrace my foolishness. But the dead are in there. If you step through that door, they don't know. Looking at the outside of where she's sitting, yeah, it looks like maybe this is a pretty neat place. Let's go inside. But they don't know the dead are in there. It's like some kind of horror show or something. The dead are in there, and her guests are in the depths of hell. She leads you to destruction. Foolishness ultimately leads you to destruction. But because in foolishness, you can't seek truth, and thus you can't seek the Lord. It's all laid out here as the opposite. Fear the Lord, wisdom, truth, versus foolishness. Chasing after ever-increasing wickedness. Wisdom and understanding will, by their very nature, lead you closer to the Lord. Where foolishness, on the other hand, will, by its very nature, lead you further and further down the road to hell. We're gonna wrap up on that note. Hopefully you got something out of it this week. Always enjoyment. I look at the clock. I can't believe we've gone this long. Imagine that. Don't worry. Another Tuesday will be around before you know it. So once again, I do appreciate those, all of you, for joining us this week. Appreciate those who financially support the show. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. And we'll be back once again next week for the Church of the Lampshade Show.